Welcome to episode number 3 of the Behind the Curtain Ministry Podcast, presented by atacrossroads.net. That's just a fancy, corny way of me promoting my own blog for the podcast I make, right? Pretty sad, but so it goes. Hey, today's episode, we are interviewing Mike Mortar. Mike is the co-founder of the band Churchill. You heard the song Change by Churchill on the intro music to today's episode. Churchill was a band from 2009 to 2013. Change was their big single that came out in 2012. The Change EP, it reached number 9 on the Billboard's Heat Seekers chart. And the title track became a hit single. That single, Change, reached number 17 on the Alternative Songs chart that year. Mike and Churchill had quite a run of it. They toured Europe with Pink at some huge shows. They also toured here in the U.S. with The Fray. They played with Imagine Dragons, Florence and the Machine, One Republic, Philip Phillips as well. They played on Jimmy Kimmel's late night show. And Mike has just a really good perspective that most of us don't get to have on what it's like to be a Christian behind the curtain of being essentially famous. I mean, I don't know if Mike would use that word or not, but certainly brushing up with a lot of famous people and getting a lot of notoriety for the things he's doing. And as a part of this podcast of Behind the Curtain, I think it's just really important for us, whether we're churchgoers or we're in ministry leadership, to just realize that we are all just people. And there's this real culture of celebrity worship, I think, that we have in the U.S. It's a culture that's bled into the church. And I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's helpful for the people that we put in those celebrity positions, people with real struggles, just normal people that need Jesus like the rest of us. And it's certainly not healthy for us to put them on that pedestal, to idolize even in a sense. So we're going to bring Mike in on the phone and have a conversation about what it's been like to be in Churchill and what it's been like to have these experiences and to grow and wrestle with what it means to have our identity in Christ when there's all these other pressures around. So let's bring Mike in.
Mike, thanks so much for joining us on the Behind the Curtain podcast, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Cool. Well, hey, if this is my third episode doing this podcast, and kind of the idea of this called Behind the Curtain, and the reason for that is I want to show listeners just what it's like to be a real person doing, it's really a ministry leadership podcast, but I'm including athletes and musicians as well, because I think there's a big difference between, you know, what we see on stage, whether that's a pastor on stage or an author, like a Christian author writing something, or a musician, you know, such as yourself, playing on stage, and then what actually goes on behind the scenes. And so I think your perspective is going to be really helpful in that. You know, you were in the band Churchill, and I think music is a really interesting thing. The industry is a really interesting thing because people can name drop bands that they like, and it's almost like these bands aren't real people. Like, these aren't real people in these bands. They're just this product that people like to listen to. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit, what it's like to be on the other side of that, of maybe being a product even. For starters, could you tell listeners, and this is not to brag, it's just to kind of give an idea of where Churchill has been, you know, talk a little bit about Billboard stats and who you've toured with and late shows you've played on, basically the kind of things that I think the common listener is going to say, like, you've made it, as in, like, that's the perfect life that everybody would want, so we know it's not. We'll get to that. What were kind of the highlights of Churchill as a band, as far as industry highlights would go?
Yeah, we, you know, it started with kind of radio, and we were able to get our song Change on the radio here in Denver. And from there, it's, you know, I went to different radio stations, and then from there, we got the attention of about 10 different labels, and then we kind of had to court these labels, and we found one that kind of fit with us and what direction they wanted to go with, and from there, it kind of just blew up, and we were able to, throughout the whole process, we were really close with a band called The Fray, and they helped us a bunch in the way of playing big shows like at Red Rocks here in Denver and some places in Texas. And then from there, it was just kind of a whirlwind playing with bands like Imagine Dragons, Florence and the Machine, One Republic, and Pink, and Philip Phillips, and just a bunch of different people. We play a lot of different radio shows that would incorporate a lot of different bands from different genres, and so we did that, but we played for iTunes and Target and mm-hmm. a bunch of different stuff. Went on Jimmy Kimmel, and it was a whirlwind of about a year doing touring stuff straight.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Got it. I remember when Change came out here in Lansing, it was on the radio like every third song. It's all like, I mean, it was on the radio constantly. And then you guys were on a commercial for like Slacker Radio. It was either like a TV commercial, maybe even. And I was like, dude, like everywhere. You guys are like everywhere, right?
Yeah, so, it was crazy. One time we came back from like a little 2-day tour thing, and I turned on the radio here in Denver, and I turned it on and heard the song, and then like I turned to 4 different stations,
dude.
And it was all on. I was like, what's going on? This is crazy.
Yes, that is so funny. That happened a couple times. I was, yeah, where in Lansing as well. Like, it's like you're on like 2 or 3 different stations at one time. So
yeah.
Talk about that for a second. Like, the music industry is interesting, right? Because it's obviously a competitive industry. There's tons of bands out there. I mean, there's every garage band in the world wants to make it, right, to where you guys were or, you know, that sort of thing. And talk about, like, the maybe even that flash in the pan feeling and what goes along with it. So are there pressure? Is there pressure that go along with it, you know, like – So you guys, Change was, or I guess maybe start with, was that your big break, you know, so to speak? And then when that happened, what kind of pressure is there to repeat that, right? Everybody loves you. And that song is played like over and over and over again. And all of a sudden you're like famous. And then that doesn't sustain itself though, right? I mean, you have to come up with the next big thing. Is that, which seems pretty common in the music industry, especially for a band that's kind of at where you guys are at. Is that accurate? And I guess, like, what kind of, did you feel any, like, personal pressure that went along with that sort of demand?
Yeah, the whole industry and the whole process that we went through was so interesting in the way that you don't know how to prepare for
mm-hmm.
that whatever is going to be coming, and we didn't know what to do. We were making decisions that we've never had to make before,
yeah.
And decisions, you know, that we tried to make the best, and I don't know. I was just like, hey, this label wants to do this, or what do you think about all this stuff, like when it comes to songs and things. And yeah, once we got with a label, there was a huge added pressure to perform. I mean, we did have a song already because there are some bands that would sign or artists that would sign with a label, and they'd kind of be, you know, work for a couple of years to get that song.
Sure.
But since we had a song already, there wasn't that pressure there of having the song. But then once we started going to make our first record, there was a huge added pressure on all of us, and just to, I don't know, it's like making magic. It's so weird. You,
yeah.
It's because there's not really a formula. Because if there was a formula, it would it would be easy to make music, and
right.
And so without having a formula, it's just kind of, yeah, there's a pressure from a lot of different people, because once you're with a label, you have a business manager, lawyer, label, booking agent, you have about 50 people working for you once you sign with the label. And we were with a small label, so it was pretty big change, definitely.
Yeah. So you're in that season, and I mean, in a sense, I guess you could say everybody loves you, right? I mean, you've made it, so to speak, and there's songs being played everywhere. You're touring, you're playing, and you know, I saw some of the photos of like your Europe tour with Pink, and you're playing in these like huge theaters or arenas, right? And
yeah.
There's tons of people, and they're like, they love you. I mean, they're right. I mean, so what does that feel like? Like, and the good and the bad of it, you know, like obviously, like there's some temptation that goes along with that of like how that could be a bad thing. But what is that like?
That it's such a different experience, because I feel like once you have kind of that, when people look at you like you're famous, it's everyone gets nervous to talk to you, and people like, I don't know, people feel embarrassed a lot, which is interesting. But I kind of know that from my perspective, in the way if I would see like someone that I would consider famous, and I would just be like, oh man, like, I don't know what to say. Like, so we got a lot of that. But I mean, with the band, with playing in front of so many people, it was actually pretty funny in Europe, because we would, play, and then after we would want to watch like Pink perform. So we would go down and we'd just kind of go right in front of the stage, and people really didn't even recognize that we just played. So that was kind
right.
of interesting.
Yeah.
Cause they're there for Pink. And so
yeah.
that was
yeah.
interesting. But when we were with, you know, Philip Phillips, or when we were with, when we did our own tours, where, you know, we'd have like 250 people a night in various cities and stuff. And it was cool. We'd do meet and greets and stuff before the shows. And then after the show, we really loved to just go, you know, talk with people. That was times, just to be a real person and like,
right.
say, hey, like, because there's music, you know, there's definitely a spiritual aspect of music in the way that it just, it connects with people in various ways. And you know, even if you're just doing a fun song or a very, you know, Christ-centered song, it's just very, it's different, and it connects with people. And that was my favorite part on playing, mm-hmm. and just kind of making eye contact with people and playing and having different solos and stuff, and just kind of an expression of who I am. And so in that way, like, yeah, it was definitely a jump, but it was the process of getting there. You know, we played so many shows and had, you know, we'd take every single show we could possibly get in Denver when the first 3 years before everything kind of just ramped up so much. But then other things like Jimmy Kimmel, and those were just, they were very odd. TV is kind of odd because it's so scripted. And
yeah, right.
So, you know, we had to run through our song a couple times before with the cameras all around. And then once we actually performed, it was just kind of like you're, I don't know, kind of a puppet almost. You're like, I'm just doing this. So that was interesting in and of itself, because it was a way different experience than playing a regular show.
Yeah, that is interesting, like, to think about TV, because obviously, I mean, people in America, so including Christians, I mean, Americans are pretty obsessed with TV, you know, and movies and things like that. And I think there's something, and so I don't know how much of that bleeds into the music industry or not, but you have this idea, like on TV, for example, you're this puppet and everyone's just telling you what to do. Like, here, you stand here. And it's probably not that different for like an actual actor in a show. Like, someone's just telling them, you stand here, you say this, you know, it's all scripted, like you said. And then we watch these people on the screen and think, like, I know them. Like, I know them because I saw their show, right? I saw this, like, sitcom that they're in. But in real life, they're, like, a totally different person, for better or worse. Like, they might be a way better person than that character, or, like, a way worse person than that character. But it's something as a pastor that I sort of reflect on, because I think, in a way, we're sort of, I don't know, we're kind of conditioned to be attracted to, like, what is fake. And I think what you describe, what you guys try to do, it sounds almost unique to me in, like, the, I don't like the word secular, but for lack of a better term, like, in the secular music industry, where you're intentionally trying to connect, right, with your fans and or people that are at the shows, like, making eye contact and trying to talk to people, you know, about life and about what this music means. That doesn't seem normal. Is that normal in, you know, with some of the other bands you played with? It seems, that seems different to me than just, I'm this sort of star up on stage and you're sort of here to worship me and I'm gonna leave as soon as I'm done, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a total different, like, mindset and a total different goal and total different reason why you do it. It has to be very intentional, and if it's not intentional, then yeah, you can easily just be about you, because everything is about you when you are in this type of role.
Yeah.
It's so easy to get in that trap and that mindset, because you have to make so many decisions a day, through texts, through email, through calls, about what you want. And mm-hmm. that can easily get explode your head and just kind of think the world revolves around yourself. And that's very easy. And that's one thing that I, even from the beginning, the reason why I wanted to do music, and, you know, not in a church setting or in, you know, say a Chris Tomlin style setting.
Mm-hmm.
But one band I kind of really looked up to was Switchfoot.
Yeah.
You know, and they, you know, with our travels and everything, they actually helped us out a lot. Drew from Switchfoot, their guitar player, just really helped us in different ways. And when we would go to, you know, play a show in San Diego, would show up to our show and just see how things are going. And,
mm-hmm.
and they were always there for, like, emails. If we were wondering something, we could just email them up and they would love to just help us out. And great guys. But yeah, that to be intentional about why you do what you do, from the beginning, was I wanted to use my God-given gift to connect with people through music. And and it doesn't have to be a song that says God, you know, 100 times through there, or how mm-hmm. to worship, but it's definitely, like, life and how you handle things in life. And
sure.
and then from there's that connection made, and then you're able to talk with people after the shows. And so that's why making that intentionality of talking with people, that's why I wanted to do music, you know. So, and that is not common in musicians.
Mm-hmm.
No, not
yeah.
at all, to answer that question.
Yeah. Yeah, because even, you know, in America, it's like the, I can't think of the phrase, but the idea of, like, being a rock star, you know, like, just like rock star mentality. And you hear, like, to be a rock star means that you're like a rock god, right? That's the, you know, you have this, actually a cultural phrase, to be a rock god. And it's like you're worshipped by people, right? And people come to you and they want to be with you, and be, you know, and it's like the sex, drugs, and rock and roll and all this sort of thing that gets put together. But, you know, my wife and I have been to a whole bunch of Switchfoot concerts over the years. You know, they're like our favorite band, and I've always really, and it's so different, unique about them. I've always appreciated how, like, John Foreman will just take some mic and he'll just, like, walk through the crowd and just, like, I mean, he's just a normal dude, you know. He's like giving high fives to everybody, but he'll, like, every show I've seen him at, almost, he's like, he grabs someone's hat from the crowd and he just wears it for like three songs and then gives it back to him. And
yeah,
I've appreciated it because it's like he's just trying to show people, like people I think want, even Christians, like we want to idolize musicians, like Christian musicians even or whatever. Like if there's something inside of us that craves, like, I'm going to put you on a stage and I'm just going to like adore you. And for you as a musician to have to intentionally break that down and say, no, I'm not going to let you do that. I'm just like a normal person. I'm just like you. You know, that's got to be hard. That's got to be hard to do when everybody wants to put you up on that pedestal.
Yeah, definitely. It was, I'd say I wasn't perfect at it, you know, and our band wasn't perfect at it. And it was very, it was just very hard to do that in the way that everything, again, was just kind of about you. And every conversation you had, even with family, it was,
yeah,
hey, what's the next thing? What are you doing?
Yeah,
where are you? You know, it's just like,
yeah.
And talking with, you know, family and saying, hey, my son does this. I was able to tell someone about you. And it's just like, I don't know. If you, after hearing those conversations over and over and over and over, it's so easy for you to just be about yourself. And because even, you know, probably the most asked question, even after a show and stuff, it's like, what do you have next? It was never like, hey, what do you like to do? Or, hey, how can I help? There were a couple people, though, that I'd run into from college that, because I went to a Bible college, that would really actually ask me, like, hey, how are you doing spiritually? And at first it kind of took me back because I was like, what? You're asking, you know, we're in a bar right now and you're asking me this, you know, question about how am I doing spiritually? But after thinking about it, I'm like, that was just what I needed to hear, like, at that time, and it was awesome. God definitely put people in places the entire way through to help me out with not succumbing to the pressures of the musical world. And the fame, if you can say I had, you know, that fame.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, it's interesting because your friends from college, and on a different scale and in a different context, you know, I similarly, like, as a pastor, I really try to be myself around people in my church and such, but it is hard because I've always only been their pastor. And so even if we're just hanging out, watching a game, you know, or whatever, like, I'm still their pastor. Whereas my friends from college, I mean, I knew those guys. We were 18, 19, 20 years old living in dorm rooms. You know, I went to Christian college as well, and it was like we were just goofing it up, you know. And
yeah.
Those guys never saw me as, like, Pastor Noah, and they never will. Like, they never will, right? These are just
–
they just know me from what we did in college and the fun we had and the community we had. And so I think there's something really powerful about that. Like, not that you would say it this way, but you know, there's like Mike the rock star, right? And I know that's not in your mind, but that's how people would look at you, right? And then there's your friends who are like, no, I just know you. Like, I know who you are. And I think there's something really, healthy and really, really biblical about that too, right? I mean, just about like community and about our needs as humans, and that it's really dangerous, I think, when we, I don't know, when we become something, whether you're a pastor or a musician or some celebrity or whatever, like when you become something that is no longer human, it's, man, there's some very dangerous, you know, dangerous waters to get into there, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, that's interesting you said about like, what's the next big thing? Because the core of the gospel, right, is that Jesus says it is finished. And this is something the last, like, 2 years, for me, God has really been, in a very transformative way, has been teaching me. Because as a church planter, it's a lot of times been, what's the next big thing? And for me, it's felt kind of like I have to earn, almost like I have to earn God's approval of me. Like I, as a church planner, morphed into this like contorted works-based righteousness. Like for me, it usually was people would ask me, how many people? That was always the first question people would ask. We started a church, and how many people are coming? And it was like, is that all that matters? And we didn't really have very many people. And so I kind of felt like a loser. I felt like a failure, right? And so it's like, oh, man. And that's a whole other conversation. But the question of, like, what's the next big thing is interesting because I've had to learn that God doesn't need me. Like, I need him. And I've always known that cognitively. But when it practically comes out, it's like I'm operating as a church plant. I'm operating as a pastor as if God needs me, and I'm getting stressed out, and all these things, like this program I'm planning, it's make or break for the kingdom of God, right? And the peace that I found and the rest that I found is that it is finished in Christ, and that that Colossians 1:22 and Romans 8:4 are true of me, that Jesus did everything needed to make me fully righteous before God. And so I wonder in the context of your music career, you know, when everyone's asking you, what's the next big thing? What does that do to someone's soul? Like, what does that do to your spirit? You know, when you're not good enough. Like, what you just did isn't good enough. What's the next big thing? Oh, you did that big thing? Great. What's the next big thing? What does that feel like to carry that around?
It's a lot of pressure that is unneeded. That, you know, it provides like the opportunity for you to prove something every single time. You know,
that's a good way to put it.
You have to prove that you're doing something. I kind of fell into that for sure because, I mean, even at the time when we were signing, I was working at Starbucks and it was just, you know, I had to prove to the people that asked every day about the music and how it was going, all the regulars, because I had really good relationships with them. And, you know, for a show, I'd just be like, hey, having a show. And I'd have 30 people that just come into my Starbucks a day, come to the shows, you know, it's just really cool. But to them, I had to prove something like, hey, it's actually something bigger. And you know, because everyone can say, hey, I'm in a band, and then like, oh, cool. But then they actually come, and that's a whole different thing. But from then on, it was even, you know, with family and with friends, like proving, like, we're actually doing something. Being a rock star is something different than you actually think it is. But that is, it's really tough because that kind of, you know, you asked about, what does it do to the soul? But it takes God out of it because you're trying to prove something that you can do and not what He can do.
Yeah, right, so. Right. And did it ever feel like, and if not, like, no, this is sort of a leading question, so just say no if no. But did it ever feel like you had to, like, prove, like, at some point, maybe on a subconscious level, did it feel like you were trying to prove something to God? Like, about your worth, like, that your worth was tied up in this, or no?
I don't think so for God in the way, but I feel like for people, I had to prove it to people.
Yeah.
'Cause I've always felt, you know, so much worth in my identity with Christ. And so it's like, with people though, maybe you could say that, well, that's a reflection if I'm proving it to people, but I don't know. I've always been comfortable with who I am in Christ. And so that next step is, well, I don't know, the people part of it.
Yeah.
'Cause I just feel like I have to show that I'm actually doing something and doing something that's big.
Right, so. Right. Yeah, no, I hear that. Did those two things ever feel like they're in competition? Like, okay, I know God feels this about me, but people, on the other hand, they don't right now, and so I have to do this to them. I have to prove myself to them. The reason I ask is because I think for a lot of people, whatever your job is, like, you could, you know, you're just I think so many Christians, well, Christians or non-Christians, I mean, but we're trying to prove ourselves to, even if it's like a guy that likes a girl, right? And so he's trying to prove himself to her. Like a lot of times it's to our boss. We have to prove ourselves to our boss, or even like the middle school kid who's like wants to prove himself to the popular crowd so he can fit in. And a lot of times it's like, I don't know, you know, these things are competing with like, no, you don't have to prove yourself because you already have that grounding in Christ of who you are, which first I'll say that's awesome, because I think if you didn't have that, you personally, Mike, like that's such a gift that's such a gift of faith that God gave you before, like throwing you, I think, to this den of wolves of the music industry. And because I think it does eat people up. I mean, I think we've seen it happen where people's they're a certain type of person, and they get into the industry, and all of a sudden, like, whoa, they even used to have a faith, they used to be a Christian even, and then all of a sudden they don't, you know, now they seem to be just very infatuated with themselves, and it's all sort of about themselves. But I guess, so back to my question, I mean, how do those two things, we know that we don't have to prove ourselves to God, yet there's pressure to prove ourselves to people. I guess, what kind of advice would you give to just the person listening, whatever they do for a living or whatever kind of their stage is in life, about that tug that they feel?
I mean, one huge thing is to surround yourself with godly people that can ask you the tough questions when you don't want to hear them.
Sure.
That was so big. And it's not that I actively sought out people. It's that God was gracious enough to put those people in my life, because I just had friends that didn't care what I was doing, that would just be like, but really, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, and it was just, that is the best thing that God has done for me, is just put people in my life that have been able to be there through the thick and thin, and you know, and just continue to encourage me to walk with Him. And then another thing is just being very intentional about what you do and why you do it, because if you know, whatever it is, it's like, if you don't have a purpose of why you want to do something, then you should ask yourself those questions, because I don't know, because getting into back to the music part, it's like, if I didn't have that drive to what I want, why I want to do music, it could have totally been about me.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have made it about me, but I think it was just God putting those people in my life to keep asking me, why are you doing this? What is the point of all this?
And that's good, I think, too, to combine, like you just said, to combine those two things, where you have those good people in your life, and they're sort of keeping you accountable on certain things. I've heard people, you know, ask, what are my motives for doing this? So for me, like, I'm trying to get a book published, and so I'll interview different authors and such, and I have friends that are authors, and because before this happens, if it happens, I want to be in the right spot. And I hear people say, well, you just got to check your motives. And I think for me, I thought my motives were good for, like, planting a church. You know, I thought my motives were, like, to reach a whole bunch of people for Jesus. And then in a couple of years in, or even a couple months in, I realized, there's these subconscious motives of, actually, I want a bunch of people to know Jesus so that people think that I'm really good, like, or I'm really, like, they validate, like, I'm validated, right, before God and before these people. And it was like, whoa, I never thought that was there, but it was there. And, yeah, what you need those people to be able to really, like, you can say, well, my motives for, like, music are good, like, I want this artistic expression, and this is like the gift God's given me, and, you know, kind of whatever it might be. But for me personally, like, I know that I can easily deceive myself, you know, and saying, oh, I'm just doing this for Jesus, but I'm really doing it for myself.
Yeah.
So man, those types of friends are so precious. Like, they're so valuable. To just have people, like you said, they can just speak into your life and say, dude, like, I see right through this. Like, check yourself. Like, check yourself, you know?
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Definitely. And Yeah, I mean, I say all that, and I wasn't perfect at all with doing that, but it was, yeah, if it wasn't for those people, I feel like I would have been at a different place than I am now, especially even my wife. Like, we were dating at the time when all this was happening. She was in South Korea, and I would have to find time every day to talk with her through Skype, and I'd have to get up early because the time difference and everything.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
She played such an amazing role in everything that was going on and really seeing through what was actually going on and just keeping me in check and asking me those hard questions. And that was invaluable. And I, you know, I thank God for that relationship as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, man. Cool. Well, I got one more question for you. I would say, this is kind of my words, I think our culture is sort of this, like, celebrity worship culture. You know, I think the way, like, the Oscars or the Grammys or whatever are set up, you know, the red carpet, and we are really obsessed with, like, rich, famous people that we've put on these platforms. And, you know, you've gotten to brush shoulders more so than 99% of the rest of the population with some of these people that we worship as celebrities, and you or others might not use the word worship, but I guess as you've had this experience, sort of, you've gotten to see the other side of what it's like to live that life, or you've gotten to build relationships with people that are quote-unquote famous, what cautions would you give to Christians, you know, listening to this, that I would say they probably can't identify it, that they're a part of this, like, celebrity worship culture, but what cautions are there for people that look to celebrities as, I'll say idols. Now, you might use a different word, but that's sort of how I see it.
I mean, the caution I would just say is to not make people bigger than who they actually are, because they are just like you. They do the same things as you. You know, it's like when I first went on tour with Pink, you know, I was really, really nervous to, like, meet her. And it was the first sound check. We were in London, just, like, ready to sound check. We were super nervous. Their sound check went late, and we only had a little time. But she was on the stage while we were setting up and came over. And, you know, we just were like, hey, thanks for having us here. And, she's like, no, thank you. Like, I love you guys. You guys are awesome. Like, one of my favorite bands. And I was just really, like, just to see, like, hey, you know, I like bands too. I like,
yeah,
I like,
right.
You know, I like going to Taco Bell and getting, you know, a quesarito as you. You know, it's just like,
yeah.
I love doing the same things as you. I just, in my, what I do, people know my name. That's it. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I can do this thing really well, and I do it, but, you know, I do everything else the same, and just kind of seeing them. I mean, I have to tell myself, you know, where I work right now, people will come in, and like the other day, J.J. Redick from, you know, the Clippers came in, and I was, like, super nervous to talk to him, and, you know, I do the same thing, but it's just like, I don't know, I have to keep telling myself as well, just, hey, they're normal people that have so many struggles, just
exactly
the same as you. You know? We're all in this together, and just because someone knows my name, it's really not different at all.
Right. Yeah, man. And that's huge, to just acknowledge that people have struggles, and, like, whatever role I'm in as a, quote, fan, or even, like, in a church context or whatever it is, like, may I be a person that, like, prays for people, right? And may I be a person that helps support people in their struggles and doesn't add to their struggles. Even the way people, like, online will comment about athletes or musicians or famous people and just rip on them, right? It's just like, or, you know, like the paparazzi craze, and it's like these people become products. You're no longer a person, you're a product. And I just think that's really un-Christian. Like, we're supposed to be, like, edifying, that we're all created in God's image, and acknowledging the struggle of being human, and that Christ is the answer, whether you're famous or you're not, you know, and praying for one another, whether you're famous or you're not. And I think a lot of that gets really lost. We forget that we're all we're all the same, especially in comparison to God. We're really all on the same level, you know?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just from being in a position where everything is, can be about you, it's like you're working with these people that want to make you happy and,
sure.
and are like, hey, you need to wear this, you need to say these things. Like, we had to go through so many different, I don't know, classes of what to say to media and things like that. And
yeah.
it's just looking at people that are in those roles that, you know, they have so much pressure from so many different things around them that most people don't even know or don't think about. And then on top of that, they have the pressure of, you know, what fans and things think about and what they say. And it's just, yeah, you're bringing up people just kind of, you know, saying really terrible things about people online and whatnot. It's just, you know, they have so many different things coming at them that it's crazy. I don't know. It's just really, really tough. So it's kind of knowing that those added pressures. And I feel like people who do it well know that there's pressure and can handle that, and I think that's a gift as well, just to be able to do things well in all aspects. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's tough.
Yeah, it's certainly like a beast, you know, we're usually pretty quick to judge. I mean, a beast, like, it's just like this big behemoth thing, like to be like a star, we act like that's the ideal life and they make all this money and such and such, but there's a real dark side to it of a lot of the things that you just mentioned, and it's stuff that people don't even think about or don't even think about the stress of, and especially if you have people that aren't believers, like, that are in these celebrity roles, they don't have Christ. I mean, they don't have the peace, the foundation. So when it comes to, like, needing to cope with things, and I'll admit, like, I'm guilty of this. Like, I'm pretty quick to judge, you know, somebody that's got a drug problem or somebody that's just, you know, whatever it might be, the way that they're kind of coping with all this pressure. But, man, I'm part of the pressure that gets put on them by the demands that I make, you know, or whatever, as a consumer of their product. So, yeah, man, that's interesting stuff. I think it's just really helpful. It's helpful because, honestly, like, as I try to get this book published and those sorts of things, it's kind of weird that in Christianity there's this, it's a super small, like, subculture comparatively to the globe, but there's a similar culture of Christian celebrities and pastor celebrities and the pressure that we put on people and the way we position ourselves. And it's like, man, I think it should look different in the church, you know? And so that's something I want to accomplish with this podcast, is for people in ministry leadership, whatever that role is, it should look different for us as ministry leaders in the way that we present ourselves to people, but then also for people that just are church goers, and it should look different for the church as well. I mean, it should look different the way that we treat our leaders, the way we support them, the way we pray for them, the way we ask the tough questions, those sorts of things. So, man, your perspective is one I never could bring to the table, and so I think it is just really helpful, and I think it translates in so many ways to just how Christians relate in leadership, how Christians consume media, even how Christians keep one another accountable. So, Mike, I just thank you so much for being vulnerable and transparent and sharing what it's like to just be a human, and then that God threw into this whirlwind, man. So thanks so much for helping out.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the questions and I appreciate the time. It's great.
You can check out the latest post on @acrossroads.net. And I'll be posting there where you can find Mike and Churchill's music online for free. Of course, you can purchase it on iTunes as well. I do encourage you checking them out. They have some really good stuff out there. Our next episode of Behind the Curtain, we will be interviewing Zachary Bartels. Zach is an author in the fiction genre. He's a pastor, and the books he writes would be considered Christian fiction, but they are not your standard fair run-of-the-mill Christian fiction, which means I actually like them. They're very good books. Zach's big book that came out in October is called Playing Saint, and I highly recommend it. He has another book coming out this July called The Last Con, which you can pre-order now if you're interested. And we're going to talk to Zach in our next episode about what it's like to be a pastor, have live a life as a pastor, as well as sort of live a life as an author, and kind of some of the paradoxes between those two things. As authors are supposed to promote themselves, put the product out there, get people to like you as a pastor. You know, we want to follow what Jesus says about people should like Jesus. It should be about him, not about us as a pastor. It's the last will be first, the first will be last, sort of these paradoxes that Jesus teaches on how ministry leadership, we're to be servants and we're to be humble. And so it should be a really good conversation. Zach is a really funny guy, sharp guy, and you're not going to want to miss that episode. So we'll talk to you then. Be sure to check out more information about the podcast at atacrossroads.net, and please do subscribe on iTunes, as we'll post new episodes every 2 or 3 weeks or so. See you next time at a crossroads and behind the curtain. Well, I went down to the crossroads down the flagging ride. Well, I went down to the crossroads down the flagging ride. Well, nobody, she was no man. Everybody just passing by. Well, you can cry. Everybody just passed me by.